Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get three-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
People, what's going on? I'm Marco Malmasi of Malmasi Fire Arts, and you are here for another episode of the Knife Talk podcast. I'm here with Jeff Fader of Fader Knives and Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives. We have the whole band back together for the first time. It feels like for fucking ever.
It's been a while. Yeah,
it's been good. But I mean, it has been a while, but it's good to be back with you guys. I'm excited to chat with you and catch up. But the knife, if you haven't heard Knife Talk podcast before, this is a podcast about knives. We talk about knives. We answer people's questions. We help troubleshoot, fix dilemmas. I think. I don't know. We'll see. And we just kind of generally BS and connect, reconnect and help keep you company in the shop while you are, or on the commute, while you're driving, grinding, whatever you're doing. And we usually like to kick it off by kind of catching up on the last week. Craig, you are back in business. You're here with us. You've been rocking and rolling. Tell us what's been going on. Actually, you've been taking a little bit of R&R for yourself. That's been good.
I wouldn't say R&R. It's been crazy busy, but it's been, you're right. It's been a while since the three of us have chatted, really, hasn't it? So, yeah, it's been, I think the last time the three of us were on a show, maybe 3 weeks ago now.
Something like that, yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah. So, yeah, so you've been traveling, Jeff's been traveling, I've been traveling. It's all been a bit crazy. So I'm still in the UK, and we actually made the decision today that we're staying here for another 2 weeks.
Oh man!
Oh wow!
Yeah. So it's been what, just over a week now. So now it's another, only because we're going to come back in 2 weeks anyway because we've got stuff to do. We need to do back over here, and we're like, the kids are off school. Why do that big travel back only to come back in a few days' time? So we thought, let's just stay here for 2 weeks. Sure. So that's what we're doing. So yeah, we're in the UK, and I've got to say, the weather is sunny. It's hot. It's fantastic. Yeah. Enjoying it.
Excellent.
And how was your trip to Spain?
It was pretty crazy. It was a 4-day thing. We did it last year as well. I've got a friend who lives over there, and so we went over and we have like a crazy night out, and we have 2 days of sort of relaxing. And we did exactly that again. And it was great. So it was turning into a bit of an annual event of Amy and I, just dumping the kids with anybody who can find, you will have them. These, you know, when you first have kids, you're like, nice. they only stay with certain people. Now it's just like, yeah, whatever. Who wants them? We're off. So we had a great time. And then we came back and we went to a gig again last night as well in the castle here in Cardiff. It's been nice. It's been good. Busy, but good. And I am knackered, absolutely drained at the moment.
Yeah. Were you just at a concert or
last night? Yeah, just watching one. Yes, yeah, just watching last night in the castle, which is pretty cool. Yeah, it's
nice. So you're like, I mean, it's like if you're not playing in a concert, you're going to watch. You're firmly ensconced in the music industry.
Ensconced. Wow. Yeah. Wow.
No, that's not a good word.
Guess who's been reading whilst on a plane lately?
No, I haven't. Ensconced is a normal word. I mean, that is a regular two cent word. I mean, I could have said you were embedded.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I suppose I am. I mean, that's where, you know, most of my time is now being spent, I suppose, you know, doing music stuff. So, yeah. No, it's all good.
Question for you about your concert.
Go
going.
For it.
Now yes. That you're in professional concerts and you go to them now, as a fan, do you, whoever you're going with, do you turn to them and say, yeah, that roadie wasn't supposed to be there, or that kid over there wasn't right? Or are you critiquing like the backstage shit more than you would have normally?
In my head, I wouldn't say anything like that. No, in my head, I probably am. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, are you watching the shows from the backstage?
Last night we didn't, but we had like VIP kind of thing, and it was cool. But what I would say is last night's gig was the smoothest like big show I've ever been to. There was like the queue was sorted, the toilets were all clean. There was no big queues. When the show finished, everybody was out within 5 minutes. It was like clockwork. It was unbelievable for a venue that's not a normal music. It was like in a castle grounds. It's not a normal sort of big venue. So yeah, it was really impressive. Really good.
So when you leave an event like that, you slam your hand down and you get on the group text with the 355s and say, I've been to this is what we need to be doing now. And you guys got to pick it up because I can't handle any more shitters that are dirty. And you got to do something, guys.
Pretty much. Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then, you know, it was in Cardiff. So you got the text, which I normally give you when we go down the dirtiest street in Cardiff for food.
The fucking overfilled garbage cans with like drunken people lying on the ground is the best.
Yeah. So you had one of them last night, but it's good. We're here for another 2 weeks. The weather is good. The kids are obviously off school now. It's all good. All good.
Mareka, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. This last week has been a sharpening week for me, which is good. Honestly, I gotta say, doing the sharpening on the side has been a nice way to break up my knife making, because I'm still making money, but it's, I don't know, it feels like less pressure. It's been a nice way to mix it up. Sharpening week, sharpened up a bunch of knives, did a little bit of work on some custom work in between, but mostly the week so far has been preoccupied with the sharpening. It's been super hot here. So also been doing kind of like half days because my shop is in a metal building and it basically turns into an oven. Mm. And so, a couple days ago it was 94 degrees Fahrenheit, which is, let's see, I'm going to do it real quick.
It's hot.
It's 34 Celsius.
Yeah.
So it was pretty fucking hot. We got down to the river. We did some swimming. That was good. I'm getting ready for, I'm not traveling anymore this month, but I'm going to be traveling next month to Minneapolis. I'm going to be doing some demonstrations at the Midwest Knife Makers Guild in Mankato, Minnesota, which is where the Little Giants used to be manufactured. I actually have a class that I got lined up with North Star Forge. That's Jason Krause that's going to be hosting. And it's going to be a two-day class. It's going to be the principles of material movement and pattern welding and pattern design kind of stuff. And so if anybody's interested in that, go check out Jason over at North Star Forge on Instagram. Hit him up and get the details about that. I'm excited to teach that class and spend some time in Minnesota and meet some people that out there that I haven't seen in a while see people I haven't seen in a while, as well as meet some new folks. Otherwise, I'm just trying to think. It's just basic stuff. Just trying to stay cool. We don't have AC in our house, so we're doing the whole like open all the fucking windows up in the morning and get as much airflow going through the house and then close it down before it starts getting too hot. And so we're just trying to stay cool and stay productive. But like I said, it's like I'm in a tin can at the shop. So once it's too hot, I got to get out of it. It feels like you can all of a sudden you start to feel this like oppressive heat of like 80, 90 degrees. And because the shop is slightly insulated, the heat comes through, but then it doesn't necessarily escape very quickly. So it definitely builds up. It's like being in a car. Basically, a closed car. Yeah. No window, no crack, no airflow, no nothing. I do try to get some airflow, but it's pretty limited. And I only have I don't have walls that go all the way up to the peak of the building, so I just have like partial walls. And so even as much airflow as I can try to create, I still, you know, there's heat coming from all over the place within that building. Yeah. So it's just
what you want to do is before you leave home, put 5 spoons in the fridge and take the spoons with you. And we all know what you'd need to do with those spoons. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's a deep cut.
Once an hour. Yeah.
I just drop an ice cube in these days.
down the
ice
hatch.
Cube on the gooch.
The trick.
Yeah.
Oh boy, the gooch we've learned last episode is where your spidey sense comes from. So yeah. if you get nervous and scared, your spidey sense gets nervous. It comes from your taint. Your taint is where the spidey sense comes from. I have to say, I do commiserate with you, Mareko, because we've never had air conditioning for some reason.
Right.
I mean, my wife doesn't like it. So it's like we just like, you know, it sucks. But at the same time, for some reason, I sleep the best when there's no air conditioning. I don't know. I can't explain it. And it's hot as shit out here, too. And unfortunately, this week I had to do some forging. I had no choice. And I forged two integrals. And it was fucking 90-something degrees in this bitch. And it was just like, well, what should I do? And I'm like, fucking just do it. And I knocked him out, and it was hot as shit. And somebody said to me, he's like, Allison was worried. She's like, you know, I'm worried you're going to get a heat stroke. I'm like, dude, I did this back in the day. I'll never forget. We had to do railings when I was at the Center for Metal Arts. And we had to do 1,000 pickets. And it was in the middle of August. We had two forges going. We had two power hammers going. And I was dumping buckets of water on myself in between heats. And it was fucking ridiculous. And I think to myself, I'm like, ain't nothing going to be worse than that. So I had to just, like, knuckle up and make it happen. So...
That's a fair point. I was down last year in the middle of August. I was down in Florida working with Steve Schwarzer, and that's probably the hottest I've ever been doing knife work. It was a fucking nightmare. I was literally outside grinding on some billet, grinding the forge scale off, and sweat was literally just pouring off my top of my head, off my nose, all over the table and the ground. I was just like, holy fuck. It was like somebody turned a faucet on. It was crazy.
You know what? It has to be the Florida thing. It's got to be you balance the heat and the no income tax. That's the balance of, like, because I would never even turn the oven on, or I wouldn't turn anything on in Florida. If I lived in Florida in the summertime, you'll fuck that shit. You know, but then you turn on a forge and all of a sudden you're forging giant billets in Florida. Forget it. Yeah. Changing professions and making forging in Florida, the suburb. Get the fuck out of here. God bless.
I have
all
been
you
trying to cook outside. Yeah, I've been trying to cook outside as much as possible, just to keep any excess heat out of the house. Yeah, on the grill in the pizza oven. What I do last night in the pizza oven, I did a sheet pan of fingerling potatoes and summer squash.
That really helped. You can't turn the oven on in the summer if you have no air conditioning in your house. That's forbidden. Forget it. I did want to ask you guys a question. I had we're busy doing some new collaborations with some chefs, so we're excited. But the beginning stage is nothing really to write home about. But really, it's been a lot of fun. I got two DMs from different people, knife people, and I'm going to give you guys the choice of which one you want me to talk about. One was about serrated knives, and the other was about the blue check mark in Instagram. So I'm going to give you your choice of what you want to talk about.
Why don't
about.
We just talk about them both?
Well, I just figured I'm trying to make this more conversational, Mareko, and I'm trying to make us have a kind of a conversation where we interact, because that's usually how podcasts go. So I thought I was radioing it up for you. So
I see.
Which would you like me to start with, Mareko?
Let's start with the serrations. Why not?
All right. So I
think we should go with the blue check mark. I think
all right,
let's
do the blue check mark.
Definitely.
All right, blue check mark first.
Go on. Go
all right, serrations first. See, this is radio, guys. This is how you do it. So the both of them are good dudes that I know. But I'm not. Look, in my bio it says no DMs. So if you send me a DM, there's a good chance I'm gonna fucking bring in here. So the first guy, awesome dude. I'm not saying his name, obviously, but out of respect, and I'm not beating his brakes. And if he does listen to this is, don't worry about that. I'm with you. Good knife maker, really good knife maker, been at it for a long time, sends me a message and he goes, I'm about to do my first bread knife. Do you have any videos or tutorials that you could send me? And at first I thought, I can't do a single podcast for a single person. You know, the whole thing is guys, send it to Knife
Audience
Talk. You know,
one.
It's just like, I can't just do individual episodes for all these people because it gets a little bit nuts. So I thought to myself, well, let me just, I have in my highlights, I have a link of something I did. And I just basically wrote to him, basically like if you said to If you said to Dr. Laren Thomas, what's the recipe for heat treating at 1084? Hmm. He would say, well, yeah, there's a range. So what I explained to him was, you know, there's a whole range here. Number one is you got to do the figure out your spacing. You got to figure out your contact wheel. You got to figure out how that works. And then I wouldn't do this, you know, practice on your first one. You know, if this one's going to a customer, don't practice on it. You know, get yourself some steel. He goes, oh, so you're saying it's not easy. And I basically say, yeah, it's not easy. But what was interesting to me was, and I'm not, like I said, fucking awesome knife maker, good dude, really talented, been at it for a while, is not new to this game. There was still, and it's something that I probably do myself, no problem, but it's thinking everything can be easy and there should just be an answer. And I feel in the knife making community, there's still, even though, guys, this isn't his first rodeo, he's been doing it for a long time. There was still like this, probably, and if you said to this guy, how do you grind a full flat grind? He'd say, well, you know, you're going to need to practice and take some time. I'm still interested in the fact that we have this sense of, it's not like the Matrix where you plug in and then you get downloaded all the information, all of a sudden you know it still. What do you guys think?
It's the YouTube generation that where you can look anything up and fix it quickly. You know, if you've got a problem with a car, you can look it up and find the fix. So I think that's just what people are used to now. And there's some things, as you said, some things you just need to put the hours in and learn, you know, through your mistakes. But yeah, I think people are always looking for that quick, easy fix. And I just think that's because most things now, that is available, you know? We live in a world of convenience now. If we want something, we can get it. I think it's pretty much runs in that same way again. I mean, just listening now before we went sort of live, Jeff, you were talking about, you know, learning Spanish. And you were like, yeah, well, I'm on this app now. And I'm learning. It's a similar thing, isn't it? You know, there's an easy way to do everything. And everybody always wants that easier way.
Well, in regards to Spanish, I know it's going to take a long time. And I'm kind of accepting of the fact that I want to know it. And I don't. Expectation
I'm not casting
of
shade. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, no, no.
Yeah,
I mean, the hardest part is. Well, what do you think, Recco?
I think the broad strokes, you know, makes conceptually things are pretty straightforward. But I think even simple processes that I even have for ways I do things, like in my Patreon, I'll talk about the simple process of flattening the bottom of an integral bolster, since you were talking about your integrals earlier. Pretty straightforward, you know, slap a file guide on it and grind away and make it flat. But I can also go for 2.5 hours talking about all the nuances and things to take into consideration and micro steps along the way. And I think that's the thing that people, I think, forget is, you know, broadly speaking, it is serrations are pretty straightforward. It does help, like you probably have in your highlights, if you jig up a little bit, so you have consistent angle and, like you're saying, mark out the spacing and figure out the depth of the serrations and all that stuff. But you still have, like, you still got to do it, and you got to be careful of not overheating the material, because it's basically sharp already at that point, and so the edge is pretty thin, and you're doing kind of what is kind of aggressive grinding along those to cut those serrations in. And but it's like that for every step of the process. It's very straightforward, but at the same time, it's very nuanced. And so, I think people just, it's easy to oversimplify when it's actually like, there's a lot going on when you're going through these things. And sometimes there are processes that are just very straightforward and simple, but For me, most of my stuff, broadly speaking, looks and seems pretty straightforward, but then there's just tons of nuance along the way. And I think that's just part of it. And I don't know if I necessarily want to, like, I don't know, not necessarily chastise anybody or like be this like information generation where just like so many things are widely available. But I think... Even like the video you were talking about, I've seen it before. I've actually, you know, I remember when you originally posted it, and it's pretty straightforward. But I guarantee, even with that information in that,
save big on all your back to school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you actually do it, you're going to be like, oh, interesting. I got to think about this, and I got to think about that, blah, 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 blah. When you're going through and actually doing it, and there's nuances that you will discover, even with your own personal setup versus somebody else's, you know?
100% right. Go ahead, Craig.
I was just going to say, you know, like certain people have like video courses and things like that you can buy. It's like the market research that we'd have and doing running a course, because we get like dozens and dozens of messages each week. So we know what people are struggling with and what people want. And like, if you guys were to put like a course together with like the top 10 subjects that would always ask, that would be like gold, wouldn't it? You know, really would be.
Fuck. Well, anyway, it would be evergreen too, was, because there's always new makers, right?
Fuck that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Fuck that. I ain't doing it. Craig Lockwood.
Jeff doesn't want to teach his competition.
I see. No, I see, you know what? That's a good point too. That's a fucking good ass point too, right there, Craig Mareko. But Craig, you know, I can hear you. I can hear those little chirps, and that the gears are spinning in your brain, and all of a sudden you're thinking about this new school system you're going to start. I know.
No,
I know
it wouldn't. It certainly wouldn't be for me. But I'm just saying the fact that we do get all of that sort of almost market research into making this product, you know. We've done, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of doing this now, and yeah, answered hundreds and hundreds of questions. We know what people struggle with, what people want. Just an aside, that was.
We got like a PhD in the knife making sociology. I mean, there is no question about it. I mean, the questions we get are the same. What's interesting about what you said about nuance, Mareko, is, you know, I was thinking about it because, like, one other question we get a lot of is, when you're forging a knife, how do you pull down the heel? And yesterday when I was forging the day before, I was forging knives down, and I was consciously thinking about all the guys who ask, how do you pull down the heel without it making... Usually what happens is people pull down the heel, it's a little far off the bolster, and then you're trying to just squeeze that little edge out, and then you end up with, like, this little fucking, you know, razor blade of shit that you have to cut away anyway. that little heel, you think, one more hit and I'll get there, and then next thing you know, you're just like, you gotta take it all out. And it is interesting because there have been so many times where I've failed, and then I look at it and I think, all right, what did I do wrong? Well, obviously I should have been taking more material from the top, and then really staying off that edge, because I don't really want to, you know, to have a razor blade of forged shit, because it's going to be ground off anyway. And that's the interesting thing about this, is I think there's a lot of people who, well, once again, it comes down to money. Everyone is doing this because, you know, there's a means to an end. And then the means to the end isn't looking for enlightenment. It's looking to pay the bills. And you're just kind of hoping for a very quick answer, because all of a sudden, maybe if you charge someone a certain amount of money and you haven't figured out how to do it yet, all of a sudden your R&D isn't being supported financially by the bid that you put out. So you're looking for quick answers because you don't want to, like, you know, you don't want to lose. And that's the hardest part about this goddamn game, is because the financial aspect of it, that people have quit their jobs and they've started knife making and they've taken orders and stuff like that, and they're unwilling to, like, allow themselves to fail in order to learn and figure out how to do the right way. Because I remember Craig and Mareko, you and I, we all been talking about serrations for 6 years, long we've been doing this podcast. And I know that I've had a pile of different ways in which I did it. They kind of worked, but I was not getting the reaction it took a long time, a lot of mountains to climb in order to get to the system that I have. And people don't want that, you know? And it's like, that's the problem. You don't get to see all the problems you had in order to make sure you don't do them again.
Right. Yeah.
Anything else to add?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, just take things a bit further from what you said. I mean, people, if this is their job and they're making money on it, to do something new that's almost like, you know, going back to school a bit, isn't it? You're not earning money whilst you're doing that, you know?
Right.
So yeah, that's why people are looking for that easy silver bullet to get it done quickly, I suppose.
Yeah, that makes sense. But and we've talked about this about I can't remember how you keep phrasing it, Jeff, but experience is, yeah. And while it is a cool idea to just jump straight to the best way or one of the better ways or efficient ways to accomplish something like cutting serrations, there's a lot of value in the knowledge that you gain along the path of learning how to do that properly, because you, without making those mistakes along the way, you have still plenty of opportunity to accidentally make those mistakes later. And yeah. And so it's like an evolution. Like you, like again, Jeff, you talk about evolutions, and as makers and creative people, it education is also part of our evolution as makers of things, and the understanding and the depth of understanding and knowledge that comes with that is honestly exemplified simply through this podcast. The only reason that we're capable of answering so many of these questions is because of our own trial and error and making mistakes. And I think that is a big part of the journey. And I understand if you're trying to run a business and you know, we're all trying to run businesses, but if you're trying to figure out how to save money and save time and be as efficient as possible, sure, you want to find the shortcuts wherever you can. But there is a lot of value in the trial and error and the depth of knowledge and understanding that you gain through making mistakes, but then learning from those mistakes, because all mistakes are lessons in disguise. Unless you don't learn, then you're just likely to make that mistake again. Yeah.
And the generation of
in yourself.
Investing in yourself. Now, I was just going to say, the hilarious part is, I think since we've started this podcast too, there has been a new generation of knife makers who started doing culinary stuff. And a lot of these guys, like I keep saying, and nobody seems to give me fritz about it, is most of them don't cook. And there are a lot of questions that can be answered with the idea of, if you just cooked, maybe you could figure something out. Like, perfect example.
For sure.
For offset serrated knives, I've seen a pile of offset serrated knives. And part of me is just like, I wonder why these guys think that why a bread knife should be offset serrated. And I would imagine that they would say, well, you don't want your knuckles to hit the board. Well, then why wouldn't you just make a regular chef knife and then put serrations in it? And there's a kind of bit of silence. Mm. And then understand that with a bread knife, you don't need to be a, you don't want it to grip onto the fucking inside of the bread. You need to have less material possible in order for it to kind of cut through nicely without it, you know, suctioning on that fucking, you know, nasty ass bread you're cutting. And all of a sudden you're tearing the bread into like mush. You got like mush bread, so that you can't cut a bread with a cleaver. So we want the thinnest possible end from the spine to the teeth. That's why it's offset and it's not just a regular shred. And people are like, oh yeah, I never really thought about that like that. It's because you motherfuckers don't cut your bread. You get the Wonder Bread and you fuck around with the Wonder Bread and you want to make a couple bucks.
What bread were you baking during COVID? Jesus Christ. It wasn't even finished baking. It was all doughy and shit on the inside.
Don't talk about COVID. There was no fucking yeast to be had in this goddamn place. The only yeast to be had is with your mother. Never mind. Sorry.
Whoa.
Not your mother, but one's mother. One's mother. But
no yeast to be had. There we go.
No yeast to be had. And with that said, guys, if you want to make sure your bread is completely cooked, go to evenheat-kiln.com. Get yourself one of them beautiful kilns for all your hardening needs. Go to evenheat-kiln.com. Get yourself one of them special kilns. Nothing comes close. You get it right on the money. Heat treat, harden, evenheat-kiln.com.
Yeah, we just talked about investing in yourselves. If you know, investing good equipment and an even heat, you need to start with an even heat, without a doubt.
And P.S. Okay. I can't bake worth shit. So, Mrago, you hit me on the head with that one. I can't bake worth shit. Now, here's the next DM I got. Next DM I got was a guy said to me, nice guy, knife maker, wanted to know if the blue check mark had any bearing on whether or not my Instagram was being restricted or not. And just was like, you know, we're having real problems with these restrictions that Instagram is causing, and I want to know if the blue check mark helps you at all. So I wrote back to him. I hated writing back to him. I said, well, it's not restricted. Number one, it's not, you're not being restricted. It's just that they're not helping you. And number two is maybe your content's not that interesting that people, you know, now it's a question of, how can you make people reshare your shit? You know, I'm still
That's
getting
always been the question though.
Well, you know, when Instagram first started, there was no push. There was no artificial push from Instagram. They weren't helping people. You know, it was before, it was like you put your shit together, you use hashtags, people looked in the hashtags, they found what they wanted to find, and they created their own community. Then, to kind of make the reels go, Instagram gave these artificial pushes to a lot of people to incentivize it all. But it was interesting because when he asked me the question, I answered the question. And I said, and then I got responded back, and I'm paraphrasing, and it was a yeah, but. You ever, somebody asks you a question, you give them an answer, and they say, yeah, but.
Yeah, but. Yeah.
I fucking hate yeah, but. I hate yeah, but so much because I feel as though if you're going to ask me a question for my opinion, and then I give an answer, you should have a, completely objective response to my answer, whether you like it or not. Otherwise, you're trying to test me. You're trying to test me, and I ain't interested in being tested. And it was interesting because I feel as though that there's still this idea that we're all artists, but the business is having a hard time because of Instagram. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I know plenty of people with the check mark who are still getting shit, or getting the whole, you know, can't share your content. So they share. And then, but they're not committed to it needing to stay up. So they share it. It gets a little bit of visibility. It shows to who they can show it to, and then they take it back down. They archive it so that they can still have some sort of visibility in general to the general public. But the blue check mark isn't a fix all. It literally is just to validate that you are who you say you are.
I'm still getting, even though I still have the orange mark that says I can't be recommended, I'm still getting new viewers every reel. New viewers.
But
you're
doing content that is crossed, what is it, like collaborating with other people. You're getting that cross audience.
Not just that. It's
visibility.
Not just that. It's I could
you
do
think
a,
there are
I
new people
do,
coming in.
I got new people coming in. I got new people. Okay. I got new. I'm getting new growth. My numbers are growing slow, but I'm definitely getting new viewer. I'm getting new viewers and I'm getting new followers, and I'm just doing things a little bit different. And I feel as though that there's still this echo chamber of people hearing what other people are saying, and then they're just spitting the same thing out, and then they think that they're being restricted, and it's just not true. Craig.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a weird one. I'm just giving it some thought now. I think. Instagram was sort of big for our community maybe sort of 7 or 8 years ago, where there wasn't maybe that many people doing something, which, you know, what we do is quite specialized, I suppose, you know, with regards to Instagram. You know, we're not, you know, influencers doing makeup tutorials, which there's millions of them. We're doing something quite specific. And I think 7 or 8 years ago, there wasn't that many people there. So we all saw this mad like growth, and we getting followers and all the rest of it. Now I think it's almost ubiquitous. If you're a maker of any type, you need to be on Instagram because that's where people are sharing their stuff. And I just think that then just sort of like floods the market, you know. So to get seen now, there's just this swamp of other stuff as well, which Instagram wants to show everybody. So you just got to try harder, and your content needs to be more on it, more shareable, and all the rest of it. And you know what you guys do is great, and it's clearly working for you. But I think those days of just putting on the odd picture that you used to have, which a lot of people are still just doing, and then complaining that their numbers aren't growing. It's because the world's moved on a bit now, and you need to be far more creative than just share pictures of the stuff you make.
That's 100% right. You know, these guys, they want to be artists. But here's the funny thing is, I've always said you're not artists, but now you want to be artists? Well, here's what being an artist is about. Fucking struggling. You got to fucking struggle. Yeah. Being an artist sucks. And I was thinking about it recently because I was thinking about the class of art majors I graduated with. I don't even know if you could consider me a sculptor still or an artist. I don't think you really can. I mean, be, you know, on the side maybe, but I don't really think, I don't think, I mean, I could if I wanted to, but I'm not, I won't for this at, for this bit. I only, there's one, my, all the 30 art majors that graduated my, my class, there's only one of them who's still an, who's still a working artist. Only one of them. And that's the hardest part. And he's fucking good, my boy, my uncle, my old roommate, Miles. He's tearing it up.
Oh, the painter. He,
no, he's not a painter. He's a bronze caster and a glass blower. He's a bad motherfucker. And he, and that's the interesting thing, is because the fact that there are so few people who their intention is to become working sculptors, their intention is to become working painters, their intention is to be working artists. But financially, it gets to the point where we're just like, well, I can't do it. And it's like, it's a one in a million shot, and you're not really, you know, obligated. The world isn't obligated to make sure that you make a living. So what are you going to do? You got to fucking work harder than everybody else, you know, and then not blame, not blame, you know, a fucking really great resource for your problems. You're not making it happen. That's the problem.
I'd be curious to these, like, you, when you got your art degree, does it go through any kind of, like how to work with gallerists or self-promotion or marketing and branding or anything like that? Or is it only about the techniques of various styles of art and art history and stuff like that?
Fucking great question. Fucking great question. Because
that's such a big part of it, right?
Well, yeah, all the soft skills that are around it. Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah.
If you, I mean, I can only talk about the, when I went to, when I was an art major, and then the curriculum that we had, there was no, here's what you do with it. And I'm not 100% sure this is, I'm not sure. It might be the same with other avenues of getting a degree, but I knew that luckily for me, my father was a painter, and he says, all right, asshole, if you want to be an artist, you're going to work for artists during the summer. So he made me, and this is back in the early 90s, find artists, and I was interning for him, and that was how I learned how to become an artist, live like an artist, work like an artist. And when I got back to college, I was just like, bro, we can talk about art, we can learn how to do this shit, but they're never going to teach you how to live like one. And that's a great question, because there was no, I mean, you had to go above and beyond to get an idea about how to work. I mean, maybe, I'm sure Rhode Island School of Design or someplace, they're going to have you have feeder systems in order to figure out how to get into, well, frankly, what they try to do is now with artists is they you know, getting a BA or getting a bachelor's of arts isn't enough. They want you to go to graduate school, and then I think the graduate school kind of feeds people into those kind of more the business end of being an artist. But that's the hard part, man. That's a good ass question right there, because I was screwed if my dad didn't fucking force me to like sweep floors for these assholes.
Well, what I feel like you learn through essentially like an artist apprentice kind of situation is not just technique and skills, but or the hard skills of doing the art, but the other stuff, like we were just saying, like the business side of things.
Yeah.
Especially from artists who are already successful. And if that's not being taught to you in schools, I honestly, like, that's kind of shitty. I feel like a school's kind of failing you a little bit when that's such a big part of...
But it's not
cool,
really...
you can be the greatest artist in the world, but if you can't sell any of your fucking art, what's the fucking point?
But there's no... I mean, I would imagine, depending on where you go, I'm sure that there are classes in order for you to kind of help you in terms of figuring out these kinds of things. And, you know, the other thing is, it also depends on how serious you are. Like, I think with anything, especially the knife making, too, you can take classes from Nick Ross. You can go to the New England School of Metalwork. You can go to Center for Metal Arts. They can show you this stuff, but they might not be able to help you figure out what to do with it then. You know, and right. I feel as though it's the same thing with these college degrees, is they're not really there to make sure you get. I mean, it's all what you put into it. And I think bringing it back to knife making, it's what you put into it. I think about Knives by Nuge, who is a fucking great dude and hardworking and out hustles a lot of people. He only been making knives for a little bit. He was a law enforcement, and then he just figured it out. He listened to this podcast, did some things, figured things out, and he busted his ass in. I mean, he goes to events, he gets tables, he really has researched himself how to do the business end of it. It's actually really impressive. Knives by Nuge is the fucking man. And he has outworked a lot of people in this game in order to become his enough successful enough that he quit his job as in law enforcement, which is a union job. I don't know what the fuck you mean. It's a fucking ballsy ass move to do that. And, you know, he's doing whatever it takes. And I feel as though that the biggest issue is you see guys like him, awesome dude. He doesn't really make excuses. And I feel as though that there are people who are going to succeed who don't make excuses, and then there are people who are going to make excuses.
Sure.
I couldn't cut it as a sculptor. I mean, I tried, did everything I could, but then, you know, it was, yeah, wasn't, it's for, not I mean, just couldn't.
It's not just the work, the visual work, as in the end result, is it? We've talked about this a million times. It's the marketing, the promotion, the accounting, that's looking after staff if you've got staff. I mean, very few of us who listen to this show are going to have big companies with like over a dozen people. You know, it generally could be one guy, maybe two or three guys in a workshop, you know? So you need to have all these other skills as well. It's not just the work, which is that end result. It's all these other skills that are combined into it. And unfortunately, you know, the marketing promotion is a massive part of that. And unfortunately, Instagram is a massive part of that. So you need to be sort of au fait with it.
But I won't do what I was told by a very successful knife maker years ago. I won't do that to our listeners by saying you can't do it, because I heard from one of the best is you can't make money making knives. And I won't tell our listeners that. What I'll say is you can do it. You got to work harder than everybody else. And trust me. Nobody wants to hear complaining. Nobody wants to hear your complaining, the reasons why you can't do certain things, the reason why it doesn't work for you. You gotta do whatever it takes, and you gotta figure it out. And I think that there are a lot of great examples of people who are figuring it out. And it's awesome, and it's great. And I think it's something to really kind of aspire to, because it's not easy, and it's not all sitting on the Riviera and all that shit and counting your money. But it's like there is a rewarding part to making it happen. I just don't want people to think we're saying don't do it anymore. You can't do it, because it's not true.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know the easiest way to make money?
Tell me.
Is to save money. Is to save money. Don't even spend it. Head over to combatabrasives.com and get 15% off. 15% off your order. So get your abrasives from combatabrasives.com. Use Knife Talk 15 and save 15%. That's amazing.
Unbelievable. So what are we gonna do, guys?
Should we get into some questions?
Whatever you want.
Should we do some questions? Okay.
Yeah,
let's
man.
Do it. I'll take the first one from Nick Alpin. And Nick has messaged us on Instagram. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. Message us and then we'll add it to the list. And Nick has done exactly that. He says, guys, I originally reached out to Jeff with a quick question, but I quickly unsent that message in order to not be part of the problem. And I'm reaching out to KTP instead. Yeah, well done, Nick. I'm working with 764th. These numbers, it's just a different language to me.
I had to
it's
look
about
it up.
2.75 millimeter.
Okay. AEBL on a K-tip culinary knife. It feels chunky and should probably be thinned. I'm still learning the ropes with culinary knives and started because you guys have influenced me. So first question is, how thin would you take 764ths? And question two is, what do you consider the ideal thickness for culinary knives? If that requires a qualifier, somewhat larger knives as compared to a utility knife. Many thanks. Okay, let's start with the how thin would you take 764ths? And let's go with a general purpose chef knife, 7-inch chef knife. Morocco.
This is an excellent question that I think Mareko should start with.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So this is just under an eighth of an inch, or just under 3 millimeters. That's already a thin stock to be kind of starting with. I would be curious, because he's saying that it's chonky. I'd be curious what kind of grind he's trying, if he's just sharpening it from there. Because that would be a very chunky blade for sure. But even if you're doing a full flat grind from the spine to the edge, that would really reduce the overall weight and the feel of the knife. I would suggest, especially on a thinner stock like this, I would suggest a gentle convex geometry and push it as thin as possible, maybe down to 5 or 10 thousandths of an inch at the edge. Which, let me just convert that real quick.
Oh my God.
Is
64th?
Is no. It's 0.025 centimeters. Or sorry, 0.025 centimeters. So 0.25 millimeters. So that should set you up for a pretty solid performance blade. Yeah, that would be my move. But yeah, a lot of people are like, they hear thin for the win. But the reality is that it's hard to pin it down because there are great performing chef's knives that exist all over the spectrum in regards to thickness, especially at the spine. Don Nguyen, one of my favorite makers, one of my favorite knives I've ever used, is very thick. It's at least 4 millimeters at the spine from the handle transition. Now, of course, wow. It has a nice distal taper, but it's quite quote-unquote chonky at the spine. But it cuts like a dream, and I think that's because of the geometry that he's putting into the material, into the blade, down at the edge, near the edge. To me, the first about inch or about 6 millimeters or so, or sorry, 0.75 millimeters, is what's most important of how that knife is interacting with the food. But as thin as you can take the edge, thin as possible is best, without it being unstable. With a convex, especially a gentle convex, you'll be able to take that edge far thinner, because you have that slight convexity gives you a little bit of beef and stability behind the edge while taking the actual edge quite thin. I think, and then you can also, of course, have very thin stock knives. I actually just cleaned up a knife that is about a 16th of an inch, or just over, I think it's about 2 millimeter, quite thin, or maybe just under 2. But anyways, but it was stiff as fuck. But it was a Japanese style knife. It had like mild steel cladding on the side, or maybe stainless and a hard core. But again, it comes down to the geometry of the blade, and it had a very gentle convex down to a very thin edge, and that thing cut great. But so that would be my move, is keep it a gentle convex, take it as thin as you can. To find out how far is thin or too thin is, like, take it and chop up some stuff on your cutting board, or lightly, you know, hit it into a 2x4. Your chef's knife should be able, not that it's used or meant for that, but it should be able to withstand some impact. And if it's starting to ribbon, then you got to either adjust your heat treat regimen for the steel, or you have to adjust your thinness at the edge and pull it back a little bit. But we get this question all the time, and I keep telling people, like, the best way to figure out how thin is too thin is to push it too far and then pull it back.
Yeah.
What do you think, Craig?
Yeah, and I mean, I generally use a 2 millimeter or 2.2 millimeter stock, which I'm just looking now is around about 16th of an inch stock.
Oh, nice.
And what is normal for a chef knife is sort of a 50 mil blade or 2 inch blade, and then you can work out what that angle is, because if you're doing a full grind, you can use Pythagoras, and if you draw it out, you know what angle you're heading at. It's generally going to be way too delicate. So that's why I'd grind it to that. It's then too delicate really to use. So, yeah, you slightly take that edge off, and then you've got an edge you can sharpen on. So, I think it's one of those things, once you've done so many times, you have your way of doing it, I suppose. If you've got 2 millimeters at the spine, you can then use half of that spine thickness, so you can create your Pythagoras. You can work out what angle you're at with a 2 inch blade, but just take it back, because that will then just be too delicate. You will need, obviously, put the sharpening edge on it. I basically grind till it's basically sharp, but that's not really going to cut it, because it's just going to be too weak. There's no meat behind that edge, so then you just need to take that off very, very slightly. So then you've got some meat, so you can put your grinding edge, your sharpening edge on. But with regards to actual angles and things like that, I couldn't really tell you. It's just when you do it, you know.
That's why this podcast is number one. just ladies and gentlemen, because we can go talk about your yeasty mom and go right into Pythagoras, the Pythagoras theorem. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's transition city over here. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. But I actually got that picture on my picture on my grinder. So if you, so let's draw a 2-inch line. But you put that in millimeters, which would be about 50 millimeters ish. 1 millimeter across, which is half your spine, and then you can work out what angle that last, you know, your sort of sheared angle will be. So yes, if you want to be completely mathematical about it, you could do it that way. But to me, 2-inch blade, full flat from the spine down to the cutting edge. Take that cutting edge off slightly, and then give yourself another sharpening edge on top of that.
This is all, it all comes, I love what both of you guys have said, and I think the most important thing is there's no standard. You know, I know people who I'm working with chefs now who I ask them when we do these collaborations, I ask them what kind of knives you use, and they'll say, I like a 9-inch knife, I like an 8-inch knife, I like a 7-inch knife. And then I always ask the question that no one ever asks. No one ever asks, well, what's your heel height? Nobody ever asked that shit. You can talk to a chef and you can any chef, what kind of knife you like. I like an 8-inch chef knife. Well, how about that heel? I mean, it's like that's the craziest part is no one ever addresses the fact that the thickness of your spine to the end of the heel, the thickest part of the heel, is all of it. And you can use you can go a million different ways. And I've actually used 16th inch stock, and then I'll use the same angle that I would on a regular, you know, 3/32 or eighth, but it's just not going all the way to the full thickness. And I am having the thickness of the steel, and then I'm also having the lightness, but the performance is very, very, very similar to if it was any other way. That's the most important thing is how thick is your heel, and then what is that geometry? Because that's going to tell you everything. And I think it's important, Nick, to fuck a few things up. I would do is get yourself some other type of steel and try different things and see what you like. Because if you have a 2-inch heel, 1 7/8 heel, or 1 1/2 heel, you're going to have completely different results. And you're going to find something you like. That's the one thing that I think a lot of knife makers starting out, my knives, when I first started out, they were thick as shit. They were terrible. And they got thinner and thinner and thinner. And it just took me to just make the decision that this is how we're going to grow. And it just takes a long time to figure that shit out. But I mean, the most important thing is fucking cook some shit. Cook some shit and figure it out, you know, what works for you. And what's the most frictionless? What's the thing that you can cook and you don't even think about the knife anymore? That's what you want.
I need to correct myself when I was saying earlier about the thinness from the edge. I said 75 millimeters, but in my head I was thinking in inches, and I meant 0.75 or 3/4 inch, which is essentially the first 2 centimeters from the edge.
I'm starting to get messages from people. People are already sending messages.
What the over fuck? In Europe, they're like, what the fuck? He said 75 millimeters from the edge. The knife's not even that wide.
You know what? Don't worry. I don't bring those to your attention. Don't worry about that. All the bad shit we ever get, I never bring it to your attention, guys. I protect you. I protect the both of you.
That's because you're protecting the audience, too.
I don't want to give you guys an anxiety. I don't want you to get an anxiety attack. We don't get a lot of problems. Should we go on to the next one?
So we're looking at, generally, you're looking at, for a standard chef, you're looking at sort of 2-inch or 50 mil heel. It's quite standard. But where would you get that steel? Jeff, I mean, where are you going to get steel of those sort of dimensions?
Well, there's a couple places. Number one, we can go to Maritime Knife Supply. Maritime Knife Supply is your one-stop shop for all that stuff. Belts, abrasives, steels. I just got some steel from him. I got some 1080 hex bar that I made a beautiful knife with. They have all sorts of great stuff. So go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com, and you can put in the promo code nothing, and you can get 10% off of a 10-pack of abrasive belts. Lawrence is the fucking guy. He's the man, and he's a facilitator. And if there's something he doesn't have that you want, reach out to him. You'll get it. So definitely get your steel at Maritime Knife Supply. And if you were to get steel at those dimensions, I would go to Damasteel. Damasteel is the best new company that's serving up beautiful, repeatable, pattern welded stainless. And it's awesome. You go to, if you go to dynamisteel.se, you can see everything. You can put in Knife Talk 10, get 10% off. And if you want to participate in the Knife Talk Dynamisteel build along that's coming up, you get your Dynamisteel at Maritime Knife Supply for that project. Maritime Knife Supply has it all. Get yourself that Dynamisteel. Bingo, bango, bongo. Was that the feed you were trying to get from me?
That's exactly it.
Okay,
hit,
good.
Hit the nail on the head. Yes, yes.
Hopefully. Should we keep going, or want to do something different?
Keep going. Keep doing it.
All right, this one comes from our boy, Paul Jansen. Paul Jansen, who, if you want to reach out to the podcast, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. Don't send it to me. Don't send it to Mareko. Don't send it to Craig. Go to Knife Talk Podcast. We can add it to the list. And this one comes from Paul Jansen. He writes, is working with carbon fiber really as dangerous as people make it to be? Aside from breathing in the dust, I heard people talk about the dust causing painful reactions on exposed skin. Either one of you guys work with carbon fiber?
Nope.
Never have done, no.
I have. I got some carbon fiber from NASA. The guy said it was from NASA. I felt like maybe it was like the gas station by NASA. I don't think it was really like, didn't come off a shuttle, I don't think. It might have come from like a gas station or something. It was way dustier than I was expecting. The fine grit and the fine dust was thick, and it was way more abundant than I'd ever noticed before. I would highly suggest staying clear of the dust from any of this stuff, any of the particulates from the wood, the steel, the G10, the micarta, all that stuff. It's all bad. It's all super duper bad. In regards to the only thing I've ever had a bad reaction to skin wise was I used to have
Coca Cola. So you keep using it anyway.
Yeah, I gotta get that dick bigger. You know what I'm saying? My shit is now nice because I use a Coca Cola dust on my ding dong. You know, gotta make sure your shit is right. You know what I'm saying?
Forget it.
So when I would cut G10 on the table saw, the G10 dust I'd have like a slight allergic reaction on the underside of my arms, but I stopped doing that with the tile saw. So I can imagine that if they say it's bad, it's bad.
I will say I've talked to our friend Don Nguyen has done a lot of work with carbon fiber, and he has talked about his process is to basically he's not wearing a Tyvek suit or anything like that, like he's going into a chem lab, but he does try to cover up his body as best as he can. He has not only a vacuum going, but air circulating out of the grinding room to help keep it away and off of him. And then before he leaves the room, he has compressed air and he blows himself off just to limit the exposure that he has to his skin, let alone his lungs, of the carbon fiber. If you've ever done any kind of insulation work, not everybody has, but holy fuck, if you're not covered up, the tiny little pieces of fiberglass and shit that get on you is terrible.
Yeah.
It's fucking terrible. And so if you want 10 times that or 100 times that, you go ahead and grind in cargo pants and a t-shirt, and we'll see how you feel afterward. But yeah, I would advise just covering up as best as you can. Just a long sleeve t-shirt or something like that would make a big difference.
As soon as I hit it on the grinder and it was like this big black puff of smoke that was like way finer and way like cloudier than anything I'd ever grinded before, I was just like, yeah, this is direct problem.
Yeah.
So I don't even fuck with it anymore.
Yeah. Fair enough. Before we move on, there's one question I want to take, but it's the very last question actually, so we're going to skip a bunch. We'll come back to them again. And it's from, I think it's Brodeal Blades. And he says, hey lads, it's Jimmy here from Ireland. Started knife making 2 years ago on a small 2x29 inch. It's all he could find, so don't ask, he says. But now he's looking for a 2x72. But he can't find anything in Europe. He says the UK buys are out due to the customs. He'd have to pay on top going to Ireland. He says he's tried from Poland, but they won't deliver to Ireland. So his options are Clarix or Beaver. Budget above 1,500, please help.
Vivor.
Never heard of Vivor, but yeah.
Can you imagine if you had a fucking grinder called Beaver?
You wouldn't leave the shop.
Oh,
you'd be grinding on that beaver all fucking day long.
All night on the beaver.
What are you doing? Yeah. You're hanging out with that beaver all day. Yeah, baby. Turn it on. Turn on that beaver. Come on.
We're all obviously going to recommend Broadbacks simply because that, you know, you've got so many different things you can do with them, and you know, all the different accessory arms and that kind of thing. But I'm wondering if they've got a European supplier now. I know there was talk of it about a year ago. So get in touch with them just to find out if they do have a European supplier. Because I mean, you've mentioned, you know, Clarix. I've got a Clarix grinder, but yeah, it's not really a patch on the Broadbacks because everything just works and fits for the Broadback. They make so many different accessories and attachments that they're designed to fit with that. So yeah, if they haven't got a European or a UK supplier, or European rather by now, I'd be surprised. There was talk of it a couple of years ago. So get in touch with them. But you know, you do mention a Clarix. I mean, I've got one. They're fine. They do the job. But yeah, if I was in the market to get one, I'd do all I could to try and get myself a Broadback. So yeah, reach out to them just to see if there is anywhere that you could get one shipped to Ireland.
Let's do a little role play. I'm going to be Jimmy, and Craig, you be Jimmy's wife, okay? And I'm gonna,
Jimmy, what are you up to now?
Hey, baby, listen, I got a problem. I'm trying to get a new grinder, and I'm trying to figure out what I should buy. But the one I really want is a beaver. How do you feel about me spending $2,000 on a beaver?
Is that your best Irish accent to begin with?
I'm not going to fuck around. Yeah. I'm not going to.
Let's do it.
I mean, I don't think it's a good idea. I don't want to do any sort of. I don't want to do any making fun of people's. It's going to be bad if I do it. Okay. Hey, darling, I think it'd be a fucking beaver or something like that. I don't know.
It's gonna be short, Jimmy.
You sound like the fucking leprechaun from the Lucky Charms commercials.
I mean, I'm telling you, it's socially unacceptable to be doing those type of accents. But I mean, I think the funnier idea would be to sing to your wife, "I got to spend $2,000 on this beaver."
I've tried the Polish one and it didn't work. I tried the American one, it didn't work.
Yeah, it's, the beaver's not cheap. Beaver ain't cheap, baby. Yeah. That's how it is.
Beaver ain't cheap.
I did get him in touch with Fingal, and Fingal kind of straightened him out a little bit.
Okay, well, that's good news. That's good news, okay. Right, okay, then, so what else have we got? We've got some feedback, we've got some tour regret, and we've got some would you rathers.
Your call.
Let's do some feedback. It's been a while. Okay, let's do that.
If you want to send some feedback our way, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. And let me just remind you guys that on September 14th and 15th in Gonzales, Louisiana, there's the 5th annual Louisiana Custom Knife Show in the jambalaya capital of the world, where you can focus on one-of-a-kind handmade knives. You can get tables and booths are still available at lacustomknives.net. All right, this first one comes from our friend Gary over at Speedster Stoves, who is a great contributor. He says, I have another idea for a segment, overrated or underrated, which I've heard in other podcasts before, I must say, but it's a great idea. So you'd pose a thing, and then we would all decide whether it was overrated or underrated and talk about it. And I think it's a great idea. And Speedster Stoves says, well, here's something to get the ball rolling. The UEFA Euro 2024, is it overrated or underrated? That's that the European soccer tournament that who won? Spain won, right?
Spain won the Euros, basically. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the Euros. Overrated or underrated?
More
perfectly rated.
Massively overrated. This tournament has seen some of the worst games I've seen in a long, long time. When, you know, you're meant to have, you know, the best players. I mean, let's face it, even though, you know, you're limited to European teams, what should be the best players in the world, really? Because, you know, football is, you know, it's taken very seriously in Europe compared to other places. And some of the games were just hard to watch. It was unbelievable. There was no... nobody wanted to win by the looks of things, you know. And how England got to the final, heaven only knows, because it certainly wasn't through desire. It really wasn't. And completely overrated.
Do you think it's because the games are too long? I mean, 90 minutes seems like a long time for these guys to, like, you know, dribble around.
No, I mean, that's what it always has been. It's okay. But in fact, they were making a rod for themselves, because a lot of the games that went to extra time and penalties and so on. So
right.
They're then paying for two hours plus some change as well. So, it just showed that, you know, these players who are on, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pounds a week, just didn't have any desire. And it was a little bit embarrassing, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Mareko, overrated or underrated?
It's overrated because I don't follow it and I don't give a shit.
Okay. All right. I will ask, is
Messi on the team that won on Spain?
No, he's on the Argentina team.
He's Argentina. Argentina. Oh, he's from South America.
That's where all the best teams are at now, right? Well, I mean, we can talk about that in a second. I did get to watch a lot of games because Tomer loves sports in general. And when I was in Barcelona, we watched every night there was a game, we watched it. And I was interested. I was asking a ton of questions. I did enjoy it. I watched the game where England won on penalties, and I'd never seen anyone win on penalties. And I thought that was pretty cool. I think it's underrated for this reason. In the United States, we don't have sports where it's an area versus an area. So, like, I like the fact that in the Euros, you got to have a passport for that country that you're playing for. So, like, I would think it would be amazing, any sport we play in the United States, if they had, like, all right, Wyoming versus New Jersey, I fucking would watch that shit all the I don't care what.
You never seen a football game? What the fuck are you? Or baseball thing?
No, but
game?
What are you talking about? These people aren't from that state. They need to be from the state. Yeah, that all those teams, they have to be citizens of that country. That's what makes it so good. Yes, it's not like you can just go anywhere. Like the guys from Spain are Spanish. You know, that's what makes it really wild. And that's what makes it so exciting because, like, you know, you don't have these guys flittering around from team to team. If you had a sport in this country where it was like fucking you had to have a driver's license from the state that you're playing, that would be fucking awesome. So I think it's underrated. Number two is overrated. I don't know if you heard, but the Copa Finals was Colombia versus Argentina. I watched a little bit of it. It was 75 minutes late because security couldn't hold the people back from getting in. People were trying to storm the stadium without tickets. They were going through the ventilator shafts.
I saw some videos of that.
Oh, it was madness because we were going to watch it because we thought, we're watching soccer. Let's watch some soccer. Getting ready for my wife loves that shit. So we're watching we're going to get ready for the Olympics. It was 75 minutes late because security couldn't contain the people trying to get into this is a Miami stadium. This is Colombia and Colombia fans going berserk, destroyed the stadium. The United States was not prepared for the carnage that was the soccer fans of this event. 75 minutes late because security couldn't get people in.
People have been watching too many Mission Impossible movies.
No, dude, this is the nationalistic thing. This is, dude, you should see the thing. These fucking guys destroyed the escalators. They're crawling through the vents it was madness. All right.
Careful, Jeff. Are you starting to call people from different countries hooligans?
I didn't say that. I didn't say any of it. I just said that we were prepared for the madness. I mean, people ain't going to Shea Stadium like that. People ain't going to Yankee Stadium and throwing themselves around like that. Trust me.
What you saw is like a light version of football. So international football is...
It's mayhem.
It's generally quite. I mean, there's mayhem. There's obviously huge rivalries. But once they're in the stadium, there's chanting, that kind of thing. But I mean, if you were in Spain and you went to a club game, let's say you went to see Barcelona or something like that, you would see total madness in there. There's fireworks going off and there's flares and stuff. It is absolutely crazy.
Well, yeah. I think it's underrated because I think I would like to see more sports in the United States where it was more like you know, real area teams, local teams playing other local teams. All right. Underrated or overrated? Blade Show. Is Blade Show overrated or underrated? Or perfectly rated?
What do you think, Jeff?
I've never been. I can hold off this one.
You've got to do whatever it takes. I mean, there are people who want you there next year. So just know that plans are being worked out to get you over there.
Oh, yeah. You know what I saw? I saw a booth where people were, I don't know if it was, they were recording it live. They were recording conversations live to then, I think, because the fucking service there is terrible, so they weren't broadcasting it, but recording live in the place and then distributing that post Blade Show. I thought that was pretty neat.
Blade Show, yeah. Overrated, underrated, Recco. Whoa.
Interesting.
You think about it?
Yeah, I gotta think about it. I think it's especially with the difficulties I think people are experiencing with visibility. I think it might be appropriately rated, maybe slightly overrated.
Wow.
But I think there's still a lot of great opportunities at Blade Show. Again, we've talked about it in the past, but you know, seeing people's work, networking, connecting with people you've never met, developing relationships with makers you admire or look up to, seeing work in person and getting hands-on and actually asking the makers questions about the process. And not everybody shares everything, but the camaraderie that it creates between makers and then also for potential customers to meet you firsthand. I think that is severely underrated, and shows like Blade Show create that opportunity where, you know, your local farmer's market, the people that follow you on Instagram aren't going to your fucking local farmer's market, but they might make a trip down to Blade Show where they can see multiple makers whose work they're interested in. And kind of get everybody in one foul swoop. So I think that's a really underrated opportunity, I guess, value prop for Blade Show.
I think it's massively underrated.
Really?
Every time I go, it would be massively overrated if I had to be there for a week. If I had to be there for a week, I would be, this is fucking overrated. If I'm there for 7 hours... underrated, perfect. Because like you said, there are opportunities to meet people, to get inspired by seeing other people's work, to get awesome handle material, to make connections, to network face to face. To be inspired. It's hard not to be inspired when you're down there, and even just meeting people that you've never met before, seeing things that you haven't seen in person. And I think it's massively underrated. And if you do it and you don't go down for a fucking week, you'll feel the same way. If you go down there like 2 days early and leave 2 days late, shit is, I mean, Waffle House, I mean, go fuck yourself. I mean, it's over. You can't, hanging out in the Waffle House, I mean, Jesus Christ. You got problems, man.
I think my brain is flipped upside. I meant to say, I said slightly overrated. I meant slightly
No,
underrated.
You said slightly underrated.
I did say slightly underrated.
Yeah.
Okay, slightly underrated. Yeah.
I was more surprised. Because
I was like, all I had was positive things to say about it. Why would I say it's slightly overrated?
I think it's underrated. I think it's definitely underrated. Here's going to be a tough one. The Journeyman Smith. This is from Gary over at Speech or Stoves. He's just writing it. I'm just reading it. The Journeyman Smith rating or the ABS rating. Is it underrated or overrated? Underrated, overrated, or if you want to be easy, just go perfectly rated. Don't worry about it.
I feel like it depends on the context in which you're trying to decide.
Come up with a context.
It seems to me, it seems a lot more difficult to get than the average person would think. If you know what I mean? So probably underrated, simply because, it is one of those things. You know, we've heard of some great, great makers that haven't managed to get them and that kind of thing. So I'd say underrated. But depending on context of what you mean by it, obviously.
There are some master bladesmiths who might say it's overrated. I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to leave it there. Whoa. I've heard some things. Okay. I would say it's underrated because I think any education is good education. I think that you would probably I think that number one, I think working to a deadline is the best thing you can hope for. Like even training for a marathon was like having a date and training for it is the fucking best way to do anything. And I think that if you had a schedule in mind to get the Journeyman Smith, I think that you would find it to be, you'd probably, your personal growth as a maker, regardless of the trappings of everything else, I think would be very, I think it would be under, I would say it's probably underrated.
Okay. Yeah, I'd say, I would say it's, I guess maybe slightly underrated.
Nice.
And to be clear, because Jeff was saying it's a great education. It is, for the most part, it's a self-education. There are opportunities to take classes around the country through ABS certified courses and stuff like that. But really, the reason I feel like it's underrated is just how hard you kind of have to push yourself personally to grow and to feel like this work is up to the snuff for the level of mastersmiths that are doing the judging these days. And there's some really high level makers in that room doing the judging. And thankfully, you know, Journeyman Smith isn't as stringent as a mastersmith, but you still got to be pushing yourself. And I think there's a lot of personal growth, opportunity for personal growth and self-education that comes with attempting to get one of those certifications, which is I told you I joined the ABS again, right? And I'm going to be testing in 2026, baby.
Oh shit! I fucked it up again. I mean, I'm out a year. I do it and I forget it. I forget to do it. And then I think it's self-sabotage. I think like, all right, I'm going to do it. And then I'm just like, yeah, if you really wanted to do it, you'd not forget.
Sure.
And then part of me is just like, obviously, you obviously don't want it bad enough. That's why you dog it every time. I should be a double mastersmith. I fucking get it. And then I fuck it off. Yeah. For the past 10 years, I'm fucking it off. I've been paying for every year and then going back to zero every goddamn time.
Yeah.
Bad standard.
I don't think it's necessarily for everybody. I think, you know, for people who are on this journey as a knife maker or a smith, it might be, who are pursuing it as like their passionate pursuit, like this is their calling or this is like a big part of who they are as a person, versus if it's just business, then it's not necessary to have any of these certifications from any organization. So I think it's really more for a personal achievement, I think, than anything. And there might potentially be some benefits that come with it. People talk about sales and stuff like that. None of that is guaranteed. So I think you got to set that all aside and look at it as your own personal challenge that you're attempting to do for yourself as a craftsperson or as a growing artist or an evolving artist or artisan.
So do we like overrated, underrated guys? Should we add this as a new bit?
Yeah, I think it's good.
All right.
It works. It works.
You liked it, Craig?
I liked it. Yeah, all good. All good.
All right, Gary, you did a good job. So, guys, if you want to send you don't have to send, all you have to send is a word, overrated, underrated, and then you can do a list of words. Now,
integrals.
We're going to get that. We're going to get all that. S grinds are going to be up there. There's like going to be a pile of things that are going to be overrated, underrated, perfectly rated. Send them into Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. We'll amass them. And maybe it'll be better than the bit that kind of didn't really get traction. We have two regrets. We could do that next week. I have a pile of those. We also have Would You Rathers, or we can, but I think we're going to leave listener feedback on a very positive note. Speedster Stoves, I put my hat out to you. That was a great bit. So send in your overrated, underrated, or perfectly rated to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. Great bit. Yeah. What do you want to do, Craig? You want to do Would You Rather? You want to do Tool Regrets? You want to just fuck around for the next?
Let's do Would You Rather. But first of all, I want to tell everybody about Indasa Rhino-Wet. We all have the problem of hand sanding, and we all hate hand sanding. Rhino-Wet makes it so much easier. So much easier. It comes in any grit that you'd possibly want. It lasts longer. It just does the job. Makes it so much easier. And you can get that from TexasFarrierSupply.com. along with anything else that you'd possibly need, whether you're a knife maker, a farrier, whatever you identify as, you can get everything you need at TexasFarrierSupply.com. Use Knife Talk 10 and get 10% off the entire order. That includes your Indasa Rhinoware, so why wouldn't you? TexasFarrierSupply.com and use Knife Talk 10 to get 10% off your order.
Hand sanded finishes, overrated. Indasa USA sandpaper was severely underrated.
Whoa, you think hand sanded finish is overrated, or are you just saying it for effect?
No, I think it's overrated. Whoa. I mean, I think it has its place. Sometimes it's cool, but yeah, we could talk about that next week.
I think it's underrated. I think a hand sanded finish is underrated.
Really?
Oh yeah, because those lines draw your eye. And I've said this before, I really feel as though some knives don't look great with a belt finish, and it's because those grind lines are going up and down, and it stunts your eye. And that satin finish, at the very least, helps kind of make your eye move along the knife in the direction that you're looking for. And frankly...
Sure, I think it's good. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, the only person who it works for, it seems, and it's because I've spent so much time with them, is the Florentine Kitchen Knives, because those discs are in the same direction as a belt finish. He says he's done with hand sanding. No more hand sanding over Florentine Kitchen Knives. All belt finish. The knives look fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But for my knives, I don't think they look good with a belt finish.
I think I guess I'll step back. I think it is contextual.
Yes.
I think monosteel knives... It definitely looks much better, but in a Damascus pattern blade,
you can't tell.
You have to look for it.
Yeah,
to see what the hand sand finish is. It's severely overrated.
Oh, I completely agree. That I agree with you 1,000%. That I agree with you 1,000%. All right. So we're gonna finish off. Would you rather this or would you rather that? First one comes from our friend Tristan Benedict. Tristan Benedict says, "Would you rather use a kitchen knife camping or a camp knife in the kitchen?" So would you rather use a kitchen knife for camping or a camp knife for kit for the kitchen? What would you rather do?
Kitchen knife for camping. Because you can always put it under your pillow then as well in case you get an intruder.
Oh boy.
Definitely
Bobcat gets in there.
Exactly. Kitchen knife for camping, without a doubt.
Or that beaver. Without a doubt. Don't forget that beaver.
Sneaky beaver.
Beaver coming by. You got to give him a plunge line.
You're not a hungry beaver. No.
Yeah. Trying to chomp your wood.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen. you got to fight off that beaver.
So I'd always keep a handy 7 inches under the pillow just in case the beaver is ready.
Yeah. Oh, baby. You can't get much better than that, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, my God. Cut it off. I'm with you.
I would say kitchen knife camping, honestly. But this is, to be fair, I would probably take my beater kitchen knife. So in my house, I have nice knives and I have beaters. And I would take the beater kitchen knife to go camping, because I don't want to use my nice knife in the woods.
No. I definitely have brought paring knives with me camping, because it's just it's more convenient. I think I would rather bring a paring knife camping than to use some fucking Bowie knife to cook dinner at home. So I'm going to go with kitchen knife for camping.
I think the idea is that you're potentially using the kitchen knife for other outdoor shit, for bushcrafting, like batoning wood and chopping shit down.
Who the fuck is batoning wood in the forest, honestly? You find some wood on the ground.
When was the last time you went camping?
Bro, I used to go winter camping with my wacko friends a number of years ago. We didn't baton shit. We found wood on the ground, and we'd fucking kick it until it's broken. No one's batoning fucking wood. Get the fuck out of here, batoning wood. It's guys who are wearing their fucking cargo pants, and they got their ferro rod around their neck. Get the fuck out of here. Get the fuck. You're kicking the fucking wood. You found the wood on the ground. You kick it into smaller pieces. Batoning wood. Get the fuck out of here. And let me guess, you're making your little willow sticks. I will qualify my chef's. You're gonna kick that wood.
No. Yeah.
You're going to kick the...
No, I was going to qualify my chef's knife, my beater chef's knife, because I've used it for opening coconuts, so I know it can take a beating. But it's not a great knife, honestly, in my own kitchen, so that's why I'd probably rather use it in the woods.
Oh, there you go. All right, the next one comes from John Marston. John Marston says, hello, gents. Would you rather rip off the Band-Aid? This is the hair here. All right, would you rather rip off the Band-Aid? Close the shop. Would you rather close the shop to make improvements and upgrades that allow you to streamline the operations while improving your quality of life, or keep the shop open, continue to feed the beast, and make small changes as you go along? So here's what you'd rather. Would you rather just shut everything down and renovate the shop the way you want to, or slowly, slowly feed it and work at the same time? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Craig, this is where you're at. What do you got going on?
What I'd rather is shut down the shop and do it that way. But, you know, for most people, that's not an option. So you have to do what you have to do. But yeah, if it's what you'd rather as opposed to what would be normal, yeah, it'd be shut down, sort everything out, reopen. Yeah.
No, Craig's move. This is your move, Craig. You shut down the shop, you start a band, become a rock star, earn a massive amount of money. Then you retire and you become a knife maker with a fucking killer shop where you host all kinds of fun get-togethers. And I can't wait.
And you know what I really like about that, which made me laugh? The idea of making lots of money as a rock star. Yeah.
Or knife maker.
I mean, that sounds great.
Or knife maker.
Only. Yeah.
Either one.
Yeah. Right. Exactly, yeah. If only, yeah.
What do you think, Greco?
I would have to do the piece by piece. I could never afford to shut it down. That's just not where I'm at. So yeah, piece by piece.
I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that either. I couldn't do the piece by piece. I mean, I couldn't do the just shut it down and fix everything the way you want to. That's what Aaron Goff's done. Aaron Goff has spent years. He hasn't made a knife in like over a year, and he's just like getting his shop the way he wants it, and it's amazing. But it's like, to me, it's total madness. I would have had to, like, you know, figure it out. He's like, nope, I'm not starting it up until it's all, everything's where it's supposed to be.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I can't do that. I can't do that. Wow. I gotta, like, I'll be in the basement while I would do whatever it takes. I would, you know, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
All right, last but not least, this is from Lucky Bastard Artworks. Would you rather be the guy in the shop who's always making mistakes, or be the guy in the shop who has to spend all your time fixing everyone else's mistakes?
I feel like I'm often one and the same. I make all the fucking mistakes, and I also have to fix all the fucking mistakes. I'm both of those guys. But if you had to pick one, which would you be?
The hapless idiot making mistakes, and nobody tells you either. So you just go along your little world, quite happy, thinking you're great at what you do.
You're just killing it. But everybody's following you, fixing everything.
You know what? I think that I would probably feel this. I would probably be the guy. I would rather be the guy who's making the mistakes, because then someone else has fixed your problems. That would probably be, your life would probably be a lot less stressful. Maybe get the fucking pipe. Maybe all of a sudden it's just like, we've had enough of you and your fucking mistakes. But I would think that, like, maybe you could learn from all those mistakes. Maybe it would be an eventful, oh my God. I just got this fucking text. I just got this goddamn text.
Breaking news.
I've just been asked, what does this say? Oh my, I've just been asked to be in a dunk tank for charity this weekend.
Oh.
Would I be interested in being in a dunk tank for charity? And this is what I'm writing. Only if I go first, because I don't want to get your syphilis. I don't want to get your fucking syphilis from you going first, you fucking dirty bastard. So the answer is yes, I will. Do this dunk tank for charity.
Nice.
For charity.
Yeah.
You'd have to. Yeah, it'd be great fun. I would, yeah.
Good for you. So the answer is I'd rather make the mistakes.
Make the mistakes, but the dream is not to be told you're making mistakes. I said, so you can live this blissful life of thinking you're an absolute A1 primo, the best in the world. But everybody just goes around and tidying up after you. That would just be the best.
Yeah, you don't have a job for very long if you keep making the mistakes, though.
Right.
If you've got somebody fixing your mistakes after you, you're all good.
There you go.
I'd rather be the guy fixing the mistakes. Because it would be frustrating, but I think I'd rather not be the one making all the mistakes.
Ignorance is bliss. I don't know. Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
Fixing all the mistakes all the time is kind of, you know, stressful too. So spotting the mistakes sometimes it's a thing. So whatever, either one, God bless you. So with that said, congratulations. Would You Rather is over until we meet again. It was a great bit. It's run its path. But for now, we're going to concentrate on tour regrets. Send in your tour regrets to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and send your overrated, underrated, or perfectly rated to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. I mean, that's it. Don't you think?
All good.
Fuck around.
That's it. That's the show. Thank you all for listening. We shall speak to you again next week.
That was funny.
Okay.
You guys are so funny with the beaver talk.
The beaver talk. Yeah. I tell you, I've got to say, I'm so hot. I'm really struggling this evening.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How hot is it there?
Just looking now, it is currently 27°C, which is, let's have a look. 27°C. To Fahrenheit, it is currently 80.6.
That's not bad at all.
It's 9:30 at night, though. You know, you don't expect that. Yeah, certainly not in Wales. You don't expect that. So yeah, it's a freak thing, man.
What have you guys been?
I was going to say you've all been traveling and that kind of thing. So what you've been listening to? What you've been watching? What you've been reading? What's been going on?
What do you think, Mareko?
I've been watching. I just started watching Acolyte on Disney Plus. It's all right. It's kind of like really slow right now. The first few episodes. We'll see if it speeds up, but I'm struggling to continue to give my attention to it.
That's the worst.
Yeah, I've started a few things recently where you're like 2 hours in, 2-3 hours in, and it's like, I've invested a bit now. I'm not enjoying it. Do I have to stick with this?
That is the worst feeling of like, well, is it going to get better? Asking somebody, is it going to get better, is always the death knell. It's like, shit better fucking start. They got to change the way they do these shows. It's got to be like fucking madness in the beginning. Otherwise, you can't, just stick with it. It gets better. That's fucking over, guys. We can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
It's getting to the point now. I get the feeling, especially just hearing your voice and knowing how I feel. I feel as though we've changed the way we are as viewers. And now instead of just like, it was okay. Now you're starting to get resentful of the fact that you've invested time in something that has been lackluster. This is the reason why I don't watch anything new, because I don't want to be resentful of the fact that I've spent all this time watching a shitty show.
I think there's just so much good stuff to see or like content to take in, whether it's books, audiobooks, music, video. Like we're at a point where it's kind of frustrating or annoying to waste your time on not so interesting things.
I got so fucking mad. I was watching the Yankees play the Orioles. They won the first two of the series, and I wanted them to sweep because they're Orioles in first place. They were up, and they were going to win. In the bottom of the ninth, the Orioles came back and won the whole fucking thing. I threw my shit on the ground. I say, fuck this game. Fuck the Yankees.
You had a tantrum?
Fuck all. I fucking threw myself around. And I was in a shitty mood for the rest of the night. I was like, God damn this fucking baseball. I spent 2.5 hours watching this goddamn team, and they let me down like this. I was furious. I couldn't believe it. It like fucking really put me out. I don't like that.
Oh, whoops. Sorry.
It's okay.
I was just pulling up a post I saw recently about baseball where teams have started, especially on games where it's just like they're just absolutely handing the other team their ass. They're bringing non-pitchers up to the mound to start pitch to save the arm of the pitcher, which totally makes sense, but they're fucking killing it. They're doing such a great job because everybody practices the hit all these crazy fast and curvy pitches, and then you get somebody up there throwing something that's like 42 miles an hour, just lobbing it down the way, and they're fucking, they can't hit them, or they don't hit them well.
They're not putting him out into the field. That's a fucking strong move, because you know you're not going to win, so why would you destroy the bullpen for the? I see that shit all the time. One part about that I don't like, it's fun because all of a sudden you see the first baseman's pitching and everyone's cheering him on. You see him smile a little bit because it's kind of funny.
Right.
And part of me is just like, you know what? You just fucking lost this goddamn game. I don't want to see any smiling out of you. Fucking pitch this goddamn game. Because that's what you end up doing, is you're just like, oh, this is kind of fun. And just like, this shouldn't be fun. You got to get your asses kicked. And now you've thrown the first baseman to pitch. I don't like that. So, yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Saying that, the Olympics is coming up now, isn't it? And I've seen lots of posts of people saying they should have like an average person doing the event first.
Oh my god!
Just so you can see how great the real people are, you know. I'm looking forward to the Olympics. That'll be fun to watch all that.
I'm looking forward to watching the Olympics too. And I used to love. I'm so upset. I used to have the original Dream Team's jersey, and for some reason I can't find it. It's gone. I had Magic Johnson's jersey from the first Dream Team. It is pretty shitty they have the greatest fucking basketball players in the United States playing the rest of these fucking jamokes. It is really like, it's some pretty shitty shit. I feel as though it's like all these guys who are just like grand champion, you know, master basketball players should not be playing the rest of the world. I do feel like it's kind of a lame situation.
That's how we feel when America bringing their soccer team to the World Cup.
Oh yeah, I bet they fucking stink. They stink. But it's I am looking forward to the Olympics. I'm definitely looking forward. Is there, now that you're in France, be in France? Is there anything that you think
we're in Wales still, aren't we?
No, but you're going to be in. Are you going to be in? You're not going to be in France at all for the Olympics.
Oh, yeah, we will. Yeah, because it goes on for a month, doesn't it?
Your area, will they do anything?
We'll see a lot of it. They do the cycling every year because the Tour de France comes through us every year as well. So they'll be doing the cycling. And I'm not sure what water sports they're doing now. Because a lot of... Don't laugh.
Yeah, I heard you laugh, Mareko, you fucking guy. It's a little beaver talk here, and all of a sudden you hear water sports, and all of a sudden that's what makes you giggle? Come on, man. You child. You're going to be urinating all over each other in the Seine. Jesus Christ.
Acrobatic urination.
Some of the stuff in the rivers, maybe. Yeah, with the beavers. So I'm excited for it. Anyway, it's always good to watch. It's awesome, you know, on TV to watch when the Olympics is on, isn't it? So, yeah.
I had a college classmate who was on the our college swim team. Their daughter got into the pre-qualifiers. So we're going to be excited to watch the swimming. We always watch the swimming. My kid, we love the swimming. The swimming is awesome.
That's great. I just keep thinking of Craig's comment about having average people do it, do some of the events. And I just, like, I had the image of me in the starting blocks for the 100-meter dash and just, like, getting, like, 20 feet down the strip and fucking pulling a hamstring and falling on my face. That would be brutal.
I'm trying to...
It would be. But it would be great to see.
One of the things that I don't understand, and this might be an American thing, is the only time they say France is for the Tour de France. Because we all say France. But when it comes to that cycling, everyone says Tour de France. You don't say France.
Yeah, because the whole thing... I don't.
You say France.
If I was speaking French, and I... Yeah, because I'm speaking English to you, but if I'm speaking French, I'd say... France, and you say Tour de France because it's Tour de France. It's all in French, isn't it?
Yeah, but they don't say Tour de France.
If you say Tour de France.
If I say Tour de France, people are going to think I'm a fucking moron.
Exactly, because then you do an English and French in the same sentence. Yeah, yeah, obviously, yeah.
Tour de France.
Yeah, Tour de France. Anyway, let's get out of here. I am boiling. I am boiling hot, and I need to go and have a shower. So, thank you all for listening, and we should speak to you next week. Bye for now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.